Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. It is a party cast, and our audio settings are all kinds of fucked up. So,
hooray.
Yay. Chris is here. Purnell is here. Brooke is here. And even though he doesn't have a review, Tim's here. Hey, how's everyone doing?
Thanks, Tim.
Great.
Purnell is here? What are you talking about? Purnell's not here.
I don't think Purnell's here.
No, somewhere else.
Here is a strong word.
It's a very strong word. This is true. I don't know. Is he present? Does he exist? Some would say.
We better give this guy a review. That's the only way we're going to find out.
What, you want to jump to those already? I mean, we have some banter. Wow. Like, honestly, Tim's here to hang out with us, and Brooke's ever, like, let's get Joe right to reviews.
That was the best we're ever going to get. And Joe was like, no, we got to talk about things.
We're literally a minute into the episode.
I think it's because we accidentally kicked off like the pre-show conversation like 40 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all my fault. I was like, you guys, the peach monster is so tasty. Here's two pictures of the can for some reason. It's delicious.
Oh, those are freaking delicious, though.
Dude.
That's probably one of their best ones in a minute. That and
I
the
cannot
pink
believe
one.
It.
Also, I'm like picturing what a peach monster actually looks like. Just a giant peach, like
it's just
ambulatory
a giant...
with like big teeth and stuff.
The weird thing is it would drip a sticky liquid because, you know, peach goo gets really gloppy.
Peach slime.
Somehow that sounds even worse than, like, the alien goo in, like, you know, of a sci-fi. Because it's like, you know what the peach goo would feel like. And
yeah.
How sticky it would get on you.
I'm just thinking of James and the giant peach.
So the peach monster would swallow you, and as you're on your way down, it's trying to digest you. Technically, it's still a peach. So would you be able to actually eat the inside of the peach
eat the thing
before
back.
It eats you?
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to eat through you first.
This is a video game I would play.
But then what if you're like, I don't like peach as a texture thing?
Well, you better find a way to like peaches or you're going to become one with the peach.
You will become a peach.
Eat the peach or you will become one with the peach.
That's peach Mountain Dew is pretty solid. They have the honey peach at KFC. Sweet lightning, they call it.
Oh, is that what that is?
Yeah, honey peach.
The problem is I have to go to KFC to get it, and they butchered honey barbecue wings, so I don't know how I feel about that.
I like peach-based beverages, but I never had luck with the sodas, and I think I can trace all of that back to Big Peach. Not like the
big
corporation.
Peach, like
big peach corporation.
Like Big Peach is trying to keep us down. I mean, like...
I think they are, though.
They are, yeah. It's a cut. Well, I mean, they're creating monsters out there, so I mean, obviously.
I just love the idea of Big Peach watching us right now as we do this episode.
The Peach Overlords.
It's like Big Red and Big Blue, but not Big Blue the level in F-Zero, like Big Blue the blue version of Big Red, because they were like, people just want more colors and stuff for their sugar sodas. And but yeah, they came out with one called Big Peach, and I tried it, and I was like, I turned into a peach monster. And ever since then, I have... Like, anytime I drink, like, a soda with peach in it, it's, like, it's bad, but then I love peach tea, and, like, if it's just a soft drink peach in it, then it's good. So, yeah.
I was going to do the whole sentence thing. That's good. But peach tastes disgusting. That's bad.
Mel, if that's not a good option for you, go to a Coke Freestyle machine, and you could get peach mellow yellow.
And a really cool
That sounds like that might actually be good. Yellow.
Peach Mellow Yellow is godlike tier drink for me. I go anywhere that has a Coke Freestyle machine, me and Ashley, both of us, Mellow Yellow, Peach. That's it.
And that's how the listeners know how old we are. We're waxing nostalgic for Mellow Yellow.
It's so hard to like push that button, though, when Cherry Dr. Pepper is also on the, you know, in that same program.
True. How about Dark Berry? Dark Berry Dr. Pepper, which just came back.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't even heard of that.
Yeah, for Jurassic World.
What was the movie they promoted for that last time? Was it Spider-Man?
Spider-Man, yeah.
Can you buy it by the can, or do you have to go to like a special store to get it?
You could just go to a store and buy it.
Right, yeah, Dr. Pepper Dark Berry. It was pretty good. I still prefer cherry, though.
That's how they get me. I'm like, I gotta give up soda. No, bitch. Dark Berry's bet.
I drink water.
I drink water too. 64 ounces a day. I was actually on like our jobs. Like, everybody in this state, drink water. Get your fill of water. I'm like on the cover, like glug glug. Drink this, kids. Like it was a. So now, as a result, I have to drink water because otherwise I'll be doing the children of this state a disservice. I have no choice. But I digress.
Tim, how's your water treating you? How's things going up there?
Good. The water is nice and cold from the filter in the fridge.
Nice.
Yeah. I was trying to think of something remarkable about my weekend to talk about, but there really wasn't. I like was mostly playing games that I can't talk about till at least next week. Yeah.
You can give us a clue.
I don't know. Can we? Let me look and see what the games are. I can't even remember.
I mean, I can't tell you. I could probably tell you what they are. I just can't tell you what I can. I can impart no feeling. upon
them. There you go. I'll do that because I want to know now.
I'm playing KO, the kangaroo game, which comes out next week. That's what I'm talking
about. Oh, yeah. Boing, boing, baby.
What is it? Card Shark is like 2 weeks from now. So
yeah, so that's what people have to look forward to on future episodes. We can't talk about them now.
I can speak to a future episode without giving away anything. Although I wasn't told anything had a embargo on it. But just today, while getting assigned a game for a future review, I have now officially passed owning 1,000 plus games on the Switch.
Congrats.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
My man.
I am, I am filthy rich with.
Where do you see that quantified?
Huh?
I can't even imagine.
Like, how do you know it's 1,000 games? Or you just have like a spreadsheet where you keep track? Or is it set this much?
Even better than that, I'm going to put a link in the. I'm going to put a link in the old chat here. I have a Backloggery account, which I've been using for 10 years.
Oh, that's so awesome. So
857 downloaded games, 142 physical games, and then I added 3 games today, so that brings it up to 860.
Jeez.
So those together is 1,000.
What are the last 3 games you bought? Not review games, but games you personally said, I'm grabbing this.
Let me still look. So, last ones that I bought. So, I can't count it yet, but I pre-ordered, Pocky and Rocky Reshined.
Okay.
Yeah, and I bought Torn Tales Rebound Edition, which is, it looks like it cost $2.
That comic book beat 'em up?
No, it costs like $2 and it's like this, like, it looks like a really low rent version of Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance. And, but there's like 3 characters that you control at the same time. And I was kind of like, okay.
What's the name of it?
All right. I think it's interesting. Like the criteria. I mean, like we both do this, but I think you're even more lenient on you're like, I'll try this criteria for the Switch.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like, it's $2, so it's like at worst it'll be terrible and I'll delete it, and you know
that's true.
It doesn't even eat into my daily coffee budget. Let's see, review, and then last week I bought Dodonpachi Resurrection full price because I was tired of waiting.
That's me with Devil Engine.
I received my copy of Death Smiles 1 and 2 on Switch, which I ordered physical.
Nice.
Yeah. And I also bought Panzer Paladin and Moero Crystal H.
Yeah.
Join me. Yeah. Well, I got to do the other Moero Crystal, right? Or are they unrelated? I think I asked
They're
you this
unrelated.
Your interview.
they're unrelated, and I personally believe that Crystal H is just the better game as far as like improvements to quality of life and stuff like that. So
okay,
like I personally wouldn't go back unless you beat this game and find yourself going, you know, I want more of this.
Yeah, I might as well then. And I bought Soundfall, of course, because I know like half the people that made it.
Very nice. Very nice.
They're all like friends of mine. I was like, well, yeah, I better buy this day one and not wait on a sale because that feels insulting to me.
I picked up a weird one today. I picked up Sonic 2006 for nice. Xbox 360.
Came back to the shop, right?
Yeah, like they relisted it to the Xbox 360 store for $4.99. It is not playable on Xbox One or Series X and S. It is only playable on 360, which has me wondering if it's going to be playable on Xbox One and Series X and S.
I mean,
man, you will keep that fire lit for backwards.
God damn right. I want it so bad.
I'll be honest with you.
I want them back.
Back when Sonic 2006 first came out, I fell in with everybody. I was like, this game isn't worth buying. Let it be or whatever. But since then, Sonic Generations came out and they put Crisis City from that game in it. And I liked that level. So now I want to go back and play Sonic 2006. So I kind of want to buy that and suffer through the glitchiness and whatnot just to see what all the fuss is about.
I probably have over 100 physical games on 360 that I still can't play on an Xbox One. And digital... But you
have your 360?
Yeah. Digital, I think I'm over 400. Mm. So, like, they need to restart that program and get more games playable. Games,
yeah, but how many of those games would you actually play on there if they did it?
The other end.
Like, how many of those games would you say, oh, yeah, it's playable? And then you just say, eh, okay.
Depends on the games. Like, if they bring El Chavo Kart to the Xbox One, I won't give a fuck. But if they bring Army of Two the 40th Day, I'll be thrilled. I would love to play that again.
Poor developers of El Chavo Kart, they heard that and they're cringing like, it's so bad about our game. It's cool.
I mean, the Crash Bandicoot games could come over. Those are going to be newly acquired. Spyro.
Yeah.
Like, why isn't Cordyceps Saga playable? Like, what's holding that one up?
Now, needs to come back. That game is
a blur.
I wish more people loved Cordyceps Saga. It deserved a lot of praise.
I just didn't.
That is a fair point. I do wonder if, like, you will see some of that stuff. You know, now that once Microsoft owns Activision, assuming that goes through, and why wouldn't it? Because when the hell is a merger? The government ever stopped a merger or a murder for that matter.
True.
So, you know, that probably would make sense to like put some of those Activision games that were licensing, you know, impractical at the time. Just, yeah, load them up on Game Pass. Them crashes and shit.
I'm still shocked. You don't like Cordyceps Saga?
I played a bit. I did not say a word against Cordyceps Saga.
I think meh was to Blur.
Yes, yes, it was. That was kind of like, eh. That would be cool, though.
I love Blur. I think that's a great racing game.
Yeah, I bet it would have more of a place in the world today than it did at the time.
I'm having to look
at Cordyceps. Were you comparing it to Burnout?
Yeah, I think it was. There was a lot more racers at that time, and now there isn't. So I think it would stand a better chance of capturing an audience.
Didn't it release like 2 days away from Split Second as well?
Yeah, I think
something ridiculous like that.
Either
of which were. I mean, there was a lot of just more racing games in general at the time, and now there just isn't. And especially if like that was on something like Game Pass, and just people could get on and play it. Like I think it would do well.
Game Pass.
Yeah.
Good old Game Pass.
That's been on topic lately, too. Seeing people say, oh, it seems like Game Pass is losing its luster or something. Like,
oh, that Kotaku article.
That was such a...
like,
yeah.
Like I don't know. I mean, I feel like they were quoted. They were trying to refer to what some people were saying, but I feel like it had to have been like a whopping three people. That's... Oh, and this is it. In this instance, I will say you people, because then you'll say, what do you mean, you people? And I mean, you people who can't get off your ass and realize how many fucking good games are on Game Pass. Those people.
Well, it's just because there hasn't been anything like AAA. That was like the thing.
We just got
like,
the show.
But that's just it, though. I get that, too. Like, I've heard people make the whole, there's no games on this system. Where are the AAA games? And I'm like, you don't need them. You don't fucking need them. But I know people say it.
I mean, there's like a new indie game like every week on there, and that's what I usually play on Game Pass.
And Sniper Elite is releasing this week. So if you want a bigger title, there's fucking Sniper Elite. There's a $60 game.
I just personally have, I mean, I know they exist. I just have trouble picturing a person out there. It's like, I don't play any of the myriad of non-AAA games that come out throughout the year. I wait for like the 10 that may or may not be decent. But I digress. It's just a shame. They're cheating themselves.
That's why I love how Microsoft just like bitch slapped Kotaku, where they quoted it and they're like, tell us you don't play or you only play AAA games without telling us you only play AAA games.
Yeah, that's pretty nice. Good.
I mean, it's a truth, and it's an unfortunate truth.
Yeah. Anyway, it's also a truth that we have reviews to get to, so should we dive into these?
It's about that time.
But that means that means Tim's going to leave us, right?
No, I'm hanging around.
What? Okay, let's do it.
Yes, I informed him of a planned break in the middle of the show where you depart.
Yeah.
And he will follow you out.
Oh my God, Tim, I passed my curse on to you. Yes,
I will walk you to the proverbial car and then leave myself.
Thank you. I love this.
And then burn out and get the fuck away from here.
leaving me and Chris to just salvage the rest of the episode as we tend to do.
Well, it's just us.
As we tend to do.
Anyway, first game to talk about tonight. Oh, this one's a mouthful. Prinny presents NIS Classics Volume 2 Makai Kingdom Reclaimed and Rebound in ZHP Unlosing Ranger versus Dark Death Evil Man. Developed by Nipponichi Software, published by NIS America, released May 10th on the Switch for $39.99. Guess who's back with a brand new pack, dude? That's right. NIS Classics is making a comeback and bringing you two console classics revamped and ready for action. Purnell, tell us about Prinny Presents NIS Classics Volume 2, Makai Kingdom Reclaimed and Rebound, ZHP Unlosing Ranger versus Dark Death Evil Man. And anytime you say the title of the game, you have to say the full title.
No, you can kiss my ass. I will not. So I'm just going to point out that one thing I liked about getting this review was it allowed me to break out my old Makai Kingdom double jump strategy guide.
Yeah.
And use just like classic days because it still fucking kicks ass. Makai Kingdom, the first of the pack, is a game that came out after Phantom Brave came. Damn, am I already at Born? Yeah. It came out shortly after Phantom Brave did, and it kind of carried over the mechanics of tactical RPG, strategy RPG that game created. And I'll go on to that in a second. But the general premise of the game is that Lord Zeta is this like superpowered overlord in the world in a world populated with other netherworlds.
He
makes a big blunder, destroying by trying to destroy the book that supposedly prophesizes the entirety of the universe. And therefore has to confine himself to that book in order to prevent the universe from going to hell. And the game is pretty much him trying to get back his old netherworld that he destroyed in the process of this whole thing. The narrative is, you know, typical NIS poppycock in this sense, but the gameplay is where I think it shines. So the game is sort of how like you do it normally. You pick a unit and you throw them onto the tactical map. But unlike other games where you have like, you know, squares that you have to move between for movement, you have a circular range that you can move between. And your movement stat determines how far out of a circle from the center of a circle you can walk to. You can equip different weapons, giving you various like levels of attack and new special skills and the like of that nature. You can get new party members by doing similar to Phantom Brave, where you can confine them, which is basically summon them into various map objects. Depending on the object you choose to summon them into, it determines what their base stat loadout will be, and then you can give them bonus points or whatever. There's a lot of complicated mechanics in this. I'm not going to go down that rigmarole. Just know if you like complicated in this shit, you're going to like the complicated in this shit in this game, too. The thing that stands out in this game, though, that I do need to talk about, there's like maybe two things. One, it's facilities. Facilities are buildings that can kind of function like the spawn point on a map. And each of these facilities can have a bunch of characters stuffed into it. And there, when you summon that facility onto the map and then you summon the units out of the facility, they come with special bonuses in the way. So, like, just making this one up, actually, no, it's a real one. The shop, which on your home base, you can actually purchase stuff from it. But on the battle map, when you summon the shop and then pull characters out of it, you will get 10% bonus money from every kill as long as that character came out of the shop. See, there's a bunch of facilities in the game, too, so you'll be trying to decipher which ones make the most sense. Enemies can use them, too, though, so you got to be careful about it, but you can do two things. You can either destroy the facility before enemies get summoned from it, or you can run into it like base takeover, send your units into it, and they'll fight inside of it, and the winner takes over the base, and the casualties will just die, because that's what they do. So, and the second thing about the game that's unique compared to these other NIST games in the past, this is the only one that's ever done it, to my recollection, is they have vehicles. So you can actually get into a vehicle and get new attacks and new stats. And then when the vehicle gets destroyed, your character pops out of the vehicle, and then they're still fighting too. There's a lot that goes on with that. And quite frankly, it to me is a lot of fun to sit there and toss up combos and the like to get these things going. Positive to the game, everything I just named. I love doing that stuff. I like going into the battles for this game. But what I dislike about the game, again, I'm just trying to rush it because there's a lot to talk about for these games otherwise. The dislike about the game is, one, the narrative is kind of weak to me. I mean, even when I played it back in the day, I wasn't too big on the story for this one. But I do like Zeta and some of the characters, but the narrative's kind of eh. And the other part of it is the fact that there are some... I wish that in the process of updating this game, they went through the process of streamlining some like the action cancel buttons and stuff. Like, for example, some attacks you can move your character around while you're trying to position them in the right position. Other attacks you can't, and you have to just kind of click them and hope they walk up to the right enemy. There's like this weird window that determines when you can cancel an attack versus when you're locked into your movement even before you select execute. It's kind of annoying in that regard, but that's how it was in the old game, and it just means they didn't update it for this one. So I guess I can't fault them for that too much, but I want to. And worth noting, because I know if I don't, people go to...
That's fair. Like, that was kind of like one of my beefs, because I reviewed the first collection, and it was very much just like copy and paste PlayStation game onto Switch, make work, and go. Like, there was nothing, you know, going with it besides that.
And it's funny you make the mention of, like, make work, because one thing I definitely got to point out, and I'm going to take your advice, and I am going to point it out for that. Yeah, I am going to hold you to that, guys. You should have fixed that. It's fucking annoying. But the other thing that if I don't point out, I'll be remiss to having not done so, is that there was a bug that was in the game, which that is, like, probably the laziest form reporting ever, is the fact that there was a bug in Chapter 5 where when you get to the chapter, the game crashes. Which means you technically couldn't beat the game. They have patched it since then, but the downside to that is that physical copies are kind of eh, because you need a patch for it to work. So kind of like those old Card Fighter carts back in the day before they replaced all the carts. So unless they update all the carts, I would not buy this game physical because that, but digital, no big deal because they did patch it. Now the other game, oh god, Zetai Hero Project, Unlosing Ranger versus Dark Death Hero Man, the longest goddamn title, is actually one of my preferred games from NIST over the years, and it's the precursor for the, at least combat and gameplay wise, superior Guided Fate Paradox, which I hope they port down the line too, because that game is the shit. And this game, you play as a young man, just an unassuming young man, who's on his way home from grocery store shopping when the Unlosing Ranger, on his way to battle the evil Death Devil.
Wait, he's shopping for a grocery store, or did he go to a grocery store to shop for groceries?
No, he's on his way home from the grocery. He's on his way home from the grocery store.
It sounded like, I don't know, if he was looking for a franchise or something. Okay, go on, continue.
Oh, he's far from unassuming. This fucker's trying to buy a franchise. but on his way home from the grocery store, he walks by the Unlosing Ranger as he's running to combat Dark Death Evil Man for the fate of Super Baby and the universe. But unfortunately, on his way there, he gets hit by a car and killed. And in his dying moments, he gives his transformation belt to this character, who becomes the new Unlosing Ranger just in time to fight the greatest evil the world has ever known. And he promptly gets his ass kicked. But then the game actually begins, in which case you go to a place called Bizarro Earth, which is like Earth but not, where you are made to train with, I can't remember her damn name, Estranger or whatever, and then the actual Unlosing Ranger original in his like deceased form. They're basically working to train him to become strong enough to go back to Earth and fight Dark Death Evil Man. The gameplay is pretty much a roguelike dungeon crawler. You move from floor to floor, beating up enemies and equipping headgear, arm gear, leg gear, and body gear. Each of these things augment your stats, but they also give you unique special attacks based on the piece of equipment you have and combinations of equipment you're wearing. The equipment wears down over time and breaks and gets destroyed, which I've always hated about these kinds of games, but that's also just kind of the how the games work. It just makes me sad in these games, particularly because you want to utilize all this cool stuff and boosts all that, but then they just start breaking on you left and right. But, I mean, you'll get over it as you find new stuff to swap it out with and whatever. But the special thing that makes these games unique is twofold. One, every time you die or pick... Unique! Every time you
I just want to point out a joke in chat. Tom says, I feel like Dark Death Evil Man was pigeonholed by his name. He probably wanted to be a gardener or something.
The funny
you just
part
have that name, like, and you're kind of like forced into that kind of position in life. I don't know.
I kind of like that he poor says guy. That because if you, when you play through the game, you learn some things. He might not be too far off the mark. But
my brother Randall Evil Man, you know, he's a plumber. He's doing pretty good in life.
Bro Taco Evil Man. But, like, you can every time you die or complete a level, doesn't matter which one, every level you gain within the dungeon gets kind of, like, stockpiled into, like, a sort of base stat augmentation. So every time you enter dungeons thereafter, your base stats are improved, which is great because that means no run is technically wasted, which is a very big improvement over games of this type, in my opinion. But the other most important and most fun thing in this game, which is why I fucking love it, is... You can basically like customize your hero through dark and evil surgery to augment your stats from the inside. What happens is your body is an actual like blueprint, like it looks like your actual physical body. And there's multiple tiles inside of your body that you can actually swap out for like transformed equipment. So, for example, a hatchet, if you implant it into your body, increases your base stats for attack power, whereas you implant a handgun and that improves your long distance attack power. You just keep putting new tiles and you expand the amount of space you can put tiles onto to further increase your base stats. Then you unlock body parts in there that can be used to extend an energy beam across the tiles to further pump them up. It gets really addictive to make yourself like the super customized character that is basically stomping heads and whatnot and taking names. And last thing I'll mention about this game is that the one cool thing about it is that when you beat it, you unlock a bunch of bonus dungeons that have a fair number of like interesting like Sentai references in addition to like the normal banter and dialogue the game has. But there's like a number of like cool like classic like it's like Sentai, but also like Tokusatsu, whatever. Japanese guy. Anyway, you know, basically like the whole
Sentai
like
is Power Rangers.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. That one's for sure. But there's another one like that is meant to be like the guy from like freaking G-Force or whatever. And it starts with a T, but I can't remember what it's called.
Anyway,
Tatsunoku. Anyway, those guys, you get like a bunch of features for that, like a lot of cool references and equipment and stuff. It's a lot of fun. Anyway, I know Joe's like, stop talking about this fucking game. The end result here is that I feel as though there's always going to be that person that's like, look, these are just two PS2 game ports. Why am I paying money for PS2 game ports? They already tapped out on this thing when the name of the game was mentioned, so they're already out of this thing.
Isn't ZHP a PSP game?
Yeah, but they're still old games. That's my point.
It's not PS2. Like,
yeah, you know, PS2 is Maokai Kingdom. Bitch. So technically, no, wait, rewind. Technically, both of these are PSP because Maokai Kingdom is the PSP port of the PS2 game, which included Peta Mode. So they're both PSP ports. Okay, Now back to the point. They're old-ass games. Now, a lot of people don't want to pay $40 for two, you know, classic game ports. They're already gone. The folks who don't care about that and all they care about is, are these games still fun? Do they hold up? Do I want to play them? The answer is yes, you do. They are a fun time. I personally enjoy them very much. I especially enjoy freaking Zetai Hero Project. Though you will get a lot of fun out of Maokai Kingdom too, especially if you like the idea of like the vehicles I mentioned before. And one thing that I didn't mention, which I'll squeeze in here, it probably has the best variety of attack weapons that they ever put in these games. You can get a syringe, nunchucks, a shovel. There's a lot of weird shit. And it's a great time.
Maokai Kingdom's a blast. I remember playing that back in the day, and it is just it's nonsense. Ridiculous. There's so, but like, yeah, the buildings and the vehicles do add a lot of fun and variety to what would otherwise be like a pretty bog standard tactical RPG, but they really add a lot to it, both in terms of fun and tactics.
Mm-hmm. And like just being able to beat guys with like a freaking like shoujo, or what is it? I guess shoujo wand or a syringe needle. Mm-hmm. This is some really cool freaking weapons. You could beat people with a pine tree. That's just great. Nice. You could be so buy this game. It's a purchasable one, especially because they patched it. But like I said, unless they make a change to those physical carts, unless you just want just a wall trophy, I'd just stick the digital for this one.
Now, if you are interested in a physical copy, they apparently still have a few in stock on the NIS Online store. It is supposedly under 5% stock left. So if you want it, jump on it quick. I know I also got an email today that Volume 3 is under 25% left. And I'm actually interested in that one because that one's got La Pucelle, Ragnarok, and Rhapsody.
Yeah, yeah, and for those who don't know, you'll get to see you if you haven't played it. You'll get to see where Prié came from, who became a guest character in multiple Disgaea games.
Nice. All right. Well, we got to move on. Next game to talk about is Sonority, developed by Hanging Gardens Interactive, published by Ash Games, released May 25th on Steam for $19.99. Sonority is an interactive music puzzle adventure set in a lovingly designed, fascinating world. Play as Esther and discover the Rockery, a place full of music and unique puzzle mechanics. Chris and Brooke, both of you covered this one, or both of you played this one. Who wants to talk about it first?
Not it.
Chris, tell us about Sonority.
Wow. Dang. Well, okay.
Oh, it worked. Cool. All right. Thank you, Chris.
Yeah, no problem. So, Sonority or Sonority? I don't know. It's only a word I've ever seen spelled. I've never heard it spoken before. So, this is a, this basically is a puzzle game. The big gist of it is that you are Esther, who is basically raiding some old temples. And I'm always wary of a game where you're a white person raiding old temples, but
right. Fair.
But yeah, her noble cause for this is that she is trying to uncover a secret like kingdom, I guess, where animals and humans live side by side and not like in the way that Joe does with 13 cats. I mean, like, I guess actually being a society of some kind.
I would consider Joe's house a society.
It's that's fucking true. Society.
We're a family. We
have an entire, like, yeah. Social hierarchy in that house. You know that, right?
Yeah, very true. Very true.
Is there a government, Joe?
Yeah. Yeah. Pernell saw it in action. He knows what's up.
Oh, I do. The cats own that house.
Exactly.
Right on.
So yeah, Sonority. That's,
yeah, so that's the kind of thing that Esther's looking for, because a bear that she befriended is sick and told her that that's where she can find the cure for bear sickness. And so that is that's her quest. And she gets there and finds out that all of the places that you can go within this place are locked up basically by musical locks. And so she picks up a pan flute and then later, of course, other instruments, kind of like Majora's Mask, I guess, in that kind of sense. But the thing about it is that the way the controller is kind of mapped up. So,
oh, did you play it with the controller? I didn't even think you could.
Yeah, you can. And it maps the 1 through 8s to all the different face buttons, directional pads, and shoulder buttons. That's interesting. And because I just steadfastly refused to game on a keyboard, I ended up doing that. It's actually not too bad.
Right.
They kind of go like from left to right. So it's like it starts off with like the, you know, right back, right trigger, and then like left and then up and then, you know, right, and then starts on the face pads and such. Except for the walking around with a stick and jumping, because those are the only other things you're going to do in this game. You're going to be playing music and then running around and jumping and befriending a cranky English raccoon and a hilarious kind of nonverbal stone face. That's actually a bunch of faces, but they all go by the name Zuzu. And it teaches you the notes by mumbling or by kind of going like, and like, you know, it teaches you a new note if it's mumbling at a certain pitch. And it just speaks with its eyes that kind of just go all over the place, and it's actually kind of great. But anyways, so it's it actually is like kind of a, somebody mentioned Loom, and yeah, it is kind of a point and click in that sense, because the puzzles are essentially things like, well, at least in the early game, they start off with like things like, well, I need this platform to raise up two levels, and then I need this one to drop down a level, and there's three, like, you know, stands here, so you play like a certain note and that affects the levels in a certain way. So like you kind of play around with different combinations of notes, which we in the musical world call a melody. And
never
heard. Chris is a real musician, everybody.
Yeah,
I'm learning so much.
I don't mean to brag, but
he's kind of a big deal.
I took half a semester of guitar lessons. I know what I'm talking about.
Is that really all you took? Because you're a phenomenal guitar player. That's awesome. So you're mostly self-taught, huh?
Yeah, kind of.
That's nuts. I've actually heard and seen this guy play, so that's kind of fucked up, you guys.
He's like, thank you to the back of Captain Crunch cereal.
Thanks to my magical decoder ring, I have figured out that E comes after C and E is shortly follows. But anyways,
oh God.
So yeah, but yeah, the thing is about this game, speaking as a musical expert with a whole half a semester of guitar knowledge, you don't have to know much music in this game to make it. It basically, you learn the notes one at a time, you know, basically you do a couple of puzzles with like the two note, the one, actually you start with one note, and then you go up, and it's just, you know, as far as I know, I don't think there's any like sharps or flats or anything. I believe it's just the C major scale, which is just all the white keys on a piano. You can literally play like all the white keys on a piano and have something. So that's like, that's kind of what the game is. And like I said, and the puzzles get increasingly more difficult. The story kind of unfolds a little bit more. Again, Esther gets to know this raccoon and, like, you know, does some more things. And I think that's basically the game. So I should hand it to Brooke now.
You did an amazing job describing that, because actually I hit Joe up hours ago and I was like, was Chris taking the lead on this one or me? And I was asking that because I was like, I don't know how to fucking describe what this game's doing, but it's cool. Like I have like all these notes in front of me in this WordPad document where I'm just like trying to describe what you're talking about, where I'm like, well, let me talk about my experience with this game. I jumped in here and I kind of played it the opposite of Chris. Like, I'm not a musician. I don't have any professional experience or know-how. So I can safely say that, like, you don't really need to know how to learn how to read sheet music or do any musical stuff. Like, for this, I've noodled around on the guitar, but I haven't really played like and learned sheet music. Like, I wouldn't consider myself experienced in any music stuff to prepare for this game. And I did not think that the music stuff was too difficult. It's like, I played it on a mouse and keyboard, so Chris definitely was playing at a higher difficulty than me. I assumed since a lot of the notes were just on the numerical bar and there seemed to be so many, like, I thought there were too many controls to put on a controller, so I didn't even check. So I just sat there like with my wireless mouse and keyboard. I started playing, and I wasn't too keen on the game at first. Actually, the first couple minutes, I was like, this is stupid. I don't want to play this. But then I started playing. I thought it was going to be like a Simon Says thing where it plays a melody, and then I have to play it back. And then I started realizing how the game really worked, which is how Chris describes. If I want one platform of a trap to go down so I can walk across it, and I need the other platform to go up so I don't have to fall down and I can sort of walk, like, to make a straight pathway, I would play, like, one note going up, so like two notes to give it up a platform, and one going down. And this is so complicated, I'm already fucking it up. Really hard to describe what's going on here. But as soon as I realized what the actual point of the game is, which is not Simon Says, which is to play with like those musical levels, it started blowing my mind. And then I kind of went back and forgave some of the faults I think the tutorial has a little bit. As soon as the game opens up, it put me kind of in a weird mood, because I feel like the vocal mixing for this game is just like really weird. Like, some voices are really loud and some are quieter. So it starts up, and I opened this game up and I was like, the narrator, the player character that you're playing as, Esther, she's, I'm trying to pronounce it as good as Chris did, but I'm not doing it. she has just a really loudly mixed voice. I think she's a great voice actor. She has an awesome voice, but I was just like, the direction for this, like, this sounds very grating. I was like, they must not have had any kind of budget for like a voice cast. This must be just be someone's friend on the cast or something. And then the raccoon shows up and I was like, did they actually have an insanely high budget for the voice cast and they just blew it all on this guy? Like, how much money this guy, he's like the best voice actor ever. He's like an old English scientist raccoon, and he's honestly like, if not the best voice actor I've heard in a video game, he's got to be up there. I want to find out who voiced him. That guy's got to be famous in the VA community. Super crazy good. So after I started playing the puzzles and understanding like the point of the game, I really loved it. And although I felt like the tutorial could give a little bit more support on like the front end when it just dumps you into the game, I have never seen a game do anything like this. I really am curious if any other game has attempted something like this before. It's super neat. Like my partner works in gaming and I pulled him over and I replayed the first part of it to be like, have you ever seen anything like this? This is so cool. And he was like, no, this is a really cool concept. I don't know how long the game is. I played it for a few hours and I'm currently stuck in this one like temple area. I was going to hit up Chris later to be like, how the fuck do I get out of here? But it must have a lot of content. When I started it, you know, I got 4 achievements really quickly on Steam and I saw it had 20 achievements. And I'm like, this must be a shorter game. But if it is a shorter game, it's going to keep people like me entertained for like 20 to 30 hours because some of these puzzles are very challenging. So I am really impressed by this.
Well, the game's sitting at $20. What do the two of you think?
Yeah, I think this is a worthwhile game. I also can't speak to the amount of content because I didn't get to the end, obviously. But I mean, there's a lot here, and it's just kind of cool to like sit there and figure out a, you know, puzzles like this in kind of a non-violent, you know, setting.
Yeah, and it's such a neat idea the way they have like the scale work to the point where like as interesting of a concept of this is, like, I don't think it would be hard for anyone to pick up for that. Like, I'm not a parent. I don't plan on becoming a parent, but I found myself playing this game being like, if I babysat kids or I had kids, I would really love to play this with them. Cause I think it's super interesting. I don't think it's too easy. I just think it's like a unique skill set you're not normally using in games. Yeah. Thank you. Oh, wow. I said unique on the show without even thinking about it. And that's how you know they really got me. It happens.
All right, well, moving on, next game to talk about is Underland The Climb, developed by Mini Cactus Games, published by Cubite Interactive, released May 26th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $3.99. Underland.
Oh my god, you stole my joke.
Underland The Climb is a platformer puzzle game where the player helps Ivy to survive an extraterrestrial attack. On the journey, the player must use different kinds of tools to be able to dig the ground, avoid acid enemies, and go through very strange places. Brooke, tell us about your time with Underland The Climb.
I will, but first I gotta say nice to Chris, and then I have to admit I was predictably gonna be like, not it, and drop off the call and not do my own review, but now I gotta do it. Chris beat me. Okay, so I'm gonna do this a little different, open this review up with the price. Joe, is this the same price as what it is on Steam? Is it $1.99 on Switch?
$3.99.
Whoa, on console. Okay, cool. Well, $1.99 or $3.99. That is just nuts, dude, because I reviewed one other game at about that price point for the show. That's The Kids We Were, that has won seriously countless awards for being an incredible game, let alone for like $2 to $4. And I'm not sure which one is the better game for that price, that one or this one. It's hard because The Kids We Were is like pure story. It's just story driven. It's an insane value. But it's almost like reading a book or watching a movie and you just have to walk around town over and over to get all the pieces of the story. No real skill or solving riddles or anything there to complete it. It was a wonderful game, but not a lot of gameplay there, if it makes sense. This is like the spiritual opposite experience of truly insane game value for this price. But in the opposite direction, there's like no story here. It's all gameplay and it's very much a game. It's a gamer's game. So how do you describe what it's doing here? It's basically a puzzle platformer. You can only walk around and jump. And in each level, your objective is to just get to the elevator. You're underground, shit's attacking your underground city. Now you're trying to get to the surface between you and the elevator in each level. there are going to be some obstacles. You need to navigate around or move those obstacles out of your way to get to the elevator and beat that level. A lot of those times, the obstacles are going to be a combo of items in your way and monsters that if they get to you and they touch you at all, you're going to die. You can't fight the monsters. You can't kill them. You can't like jump on their head. And you'll either have to navigate around the level or you'll have to release a specific type of obstacle that normally would kill you. So it will hit and kill them instead. But be careful. Anything that can kill them can kill you. A common thing in this game you may choose to kill monsters is hilariously, I wrote in my notes, a mysterious liquid, which after hearing Joe's description of the game, I realize now is acid. So, but I'm going to keep going with that. There's a mysterious liquid that's in each level. I don't know
what
it's supposed to be.
It's peach monster.
Could be anything.
Peach monster. Poison, toxic waste. I don't know. But the neat thing is the fluid will behave like it does in real life. And you'll have to think about where it might end up after you release it as a weapon. It's not going to sink.
Please don't call it the fluid.
Oh my gosh. I use fluid in this so much. I'm going to try to chill on that just for you, Tim, but it might
be right. No, it's fine. Go on.
Okay. So if
it's
you release
like, it's the fluid. I
you release. Okay. How about that fluid? How are you feeling about that?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Next one is that fluid. If you release that fluid into an area, you guys see where I'm going with this. Now, how are you going around editing the level and releasing fluids and shit anyway? You're either going to have to navigate through different controls through the level that are associated with different machines and doors and what have you that you can kind of press and interact with, but you don't have to walk to them to interact with them. Your controls are kind of like you're controlling the level itself, and you can toggle to the like player character to move that after you're done moving stuff on the level. Did you guys ever play Lemmings growing up?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so this is like Lemmings if, like, you had to live with the Lemmings and they'll kill you if they can touch you. So you kind of, like, you're going to want to edit the level a little bit to, like, get things to go where they're going to go. And sometimes you'll have the monsters, like, walking down a ramp so they can't interact with you anymore, so you can kind of jump over and navigate over the ramp. If you can picture that, this game is definitely inspired by things like that. And I lost my place in my notes. Let me just get back there. All right, so you... I tell you guys, I really write them down. But then when I go off on a tangent, sometimes I'm like, what fucking paragraph was I on? Okay, so you got the different doors and machines you can interact with. But you also have a mining pick you can use, which basically works like the eraser in MS Paint, where you can drag it around to basically erase like the ground. You can't erase anything but the ground, so it does feel like you're kind of digging through. So you got a lot of freedom as far as what pixels you're erasing and the ease and shape of being able to quickly erase slash mine in whatever shape you want. This works super, super well and is super smooth from my experience, whether you're using a Switch controller or a touchscreen. So that's always nice, especially at a cheaper price point like this. I see the option to use like the controller and touchscreen on Switch, and I just think, oh, great, you know, this isn't going to work right. But in this case, it actually works really right. It works so right that after I got used to the game and played a few levels, I wanted to look up if this was just going to be on Switch or not. And I assumed it would only be a Switch release because it just feels really... Yeah, but it's like it feels really optimized for that. It's really smooth. Like I have played $25 games on Switch. I'm sure we all have that. Like don't work nearly as well. So I'm really impressed with just mechanically how this game works.
So and they if you're put care into the port. That's good to hear.
They really, really did. I was really impressed with this port. Like it's if you're going to be playing with physics, like mechanic stuff, I think you do have to put a lot of love into it. But we've all played games that kind of don't do that, even though they should for the type of game it is. So this is just a really good example of like what that would look like at this price point and what can be done. So a lot like Dog's Donuts from last week, I had to start thinking about not only where and when stuff are going to fall down if I shoot it or drill through the thing it's sitting on, et cetera, et cetera. But I also had to think about momentum. How fast is the thing falling? And did that speed cause it to roll further once it dropped and hit the ground, et cetera, et cetera. Outside of stuff like that, there's just a ton of nice touches in this game that make it really feel like a living world you're in. And at that few dollar price point, that is really something I wasn't expecting. I don't expect like a living, feeling, immersive environment with cool ambient music and sounds, even at the $20 price point. So I was super impressed with this. It's not crazy stuff, but like nice touches, stuff like you'll do a few levels in the game and you'll start to realize, oh, when I get to the elevator goes up and it's always the same speed. Few levels in, you'll pull an object with you onto the elevator, and suddenly the elevator is just going a little bit slower, but enough to where you can notice. And that nice touch, like, didn't have anything that wasn't a riddle to solve. It's just stuff like that that's just kind of scattered throughout the game that just makes it feel real. And I always really appreciate that. continuing to compare this game to The Kids We Were, almost done with this part of the review. If you are a Kids We Were fan, you're probably a fan in spite of the very simple art that it has throughout the game. One look at the graphics of this game, and you'll be like, oh, okay, that's why it only costs a few bucks. It's a simply made game. And while the game's art is certainly charmingly pixelated and like simple, quote unquote, compared to maybe some other higher budget games, it is not bad looking at all. I find this game to be very attractive and pretty. I think it looks really good. I think the monsters look awesome. And then I ended up just liking the terrain tools and character sprites more the further I went into it. I really can't say anything bad about this game except for one thing. And it's a really small complaint. It's just an auditory complaint, actually. So I'm going to turn on my Switch and just let you guys experience this with me. This will be fun.
Okay.
Oh, we're almost done, Joe. Don't worry.
Oh, that's fine.
Okay. So tell me if you can hear this background music.
Do, 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 do.
You guys hear any of that? I haven't tried to do something like this before.
Oh, here.
Yep.
There we go.
It's got cool, creepy, ambient music. This is great. This is a great level vibe, except here's the sound effect that happens constantly through the level when you're actually playing.
Oh, dear.
So, yeah, that's going to happen like 20 to 50 times each level because that's the sound that happens when you select your guy when you try to move into the elevator or do anything with him. So I hate that. There's not an option to turn it off, but that's the only complaint. That's really not bad.
So yeah, that's it. What's up? Hi.
Hi. Hey, I like 5 minutes of this and Carrie was like, please turn that off. I'm going to strangle something. I was like, heard. Sorry about that. But yeah, this game's cool. This is a buy it, dude.
Nice. I was going to say $4. What are your thoughts? But you covered it already.
I think this is a buy it for anybody and not just because of the price. I mean, the price is certainly cool, but like I think anyone would like this game or at least get a kick out of it. If you're tired of puzzle platformers, if you're already tired of them, like I thought that I really was because I mostly am, this is almost like a totally different game. Like I'm going to do the opposite of my usual review thing where I cop out and I'm going to say that if you think you don't like the type of game or subgenre this game's trying to be, I really think you should still buy this. I think it's just a great game to have. I don't have any other game quite like this. And I think anybody could get something out of it and appreciate it. And I had this whole thing I wrote when I thought it was $2. I'll just go ahead and read it anyway so you guys know how much work and care I put into this and how much I love you guys. So I said, I'm going to put my money where my mouth is. If you try this game, this is when I thought it was $2 because I saw it on Steam. If you try this game because I told it to and you hate it, reach out to me. Reach out to us and demand Brooke Poole give you your $2 back. That's right. I'll give you $2. That's 1 cent over asking price. So you're making money on this deal.
Tax.
And then I had written in my notes, I'm really terrified as I say these words, not because I think these our listeners are going to take advantage of this incredible deal, but because I'm worried that Purnell will. So if you've been listening to us since last year, we were talking about how great financially Purnell is just with like Target.
Yeah, he's going to think of some scheme to like somehow make money off you.
Yeah. So I wrote this out in my notes. And
here
I was like,
comes the bots. I was like, I too did not like this game.
So I offered a rebate, but on the condition of if you are Purnell, you have to take a lie detector test.
Wow.
I think that Purnell would like this game. Okay, review over. Thank you.
Wow, that's rough. That's
amazing.
You've known me forever today. You've known me for years, actually known me for months. And you don't believe that I'm telling the truth when I say like a game?
I think you've always told the truth every time I've spoken with you. But if you came to me and you wanted your $2 back and your story was you didn't like the game, I would make you take a lie detector test. I think you would like it.
Now, here's the thing, though. Now, if I rode up on a bike demanding my $2 back, then yeah, I want my $2. But
$2! For now, if you ever ride up to me on a bike and you want $2 for whatever reason, I'm going to give it to him. You're like, here you go, Purnell. Go get that ice cream. Don't spend it all in one place, kid.
With this inflation, I can get half an ice cream. With inflation, I wouldn't be able to get ice cream with that. I'd be getting like the stick.
Popsicle in this economy?
Not even a melty ice Sonic, like, popsicle.
I was thinking of the Sonic,
I can get one bubblegum eye.
One bubblegum. Jesus.
That's awesome.
Oh, man. All right. Well, Brooke, that is it for you. We will let you get going. I know you got some shit to do. Tim, you going to head out as well?
Yes, I am. Yes.
All right.
$2.
Let's get out of here, bud.
Yeah.
Come
get you to your car. Get you home safe.
this is going to be the best month ever, you guys. Hey, good night, you guys. This is a blast. I'm going to see y'all next Tuesday.
All right, do you have any final words?
Ooh, I did. I had final words in case you asked me last week. Let me see what I wrote down. I had a quote from my favorite philosopher. And if you can tell me what philosopher said it, I'll give you $2. I got $2 burning a hole in my pocket. Okay. If a man does not have the sauce, then he is lost. But the same man can be lost in the sauce.
That would be Chef Eustace Von Boyardee.
Wow. So close. No, it was Gucci Mane. All right. Good night, everyone.
Eustace Von Chef Boyardee.
He really said that. More on Gucci Mane next week with me, Brooke. Okay, good night, everyone.
More on Gucci Mane.
Hey, Brooke.
Tim, any final words?
I don't know why this jumped into my head when Brooke was mentioning the kids we were, but time is ticking if you want to play Attack of the Friday Monsters on the 3DS, which was a really cool adventure walking game that you can only play on the 3DS, and you can't buy it with credit card money anymore. You'd have to get yourself an eShop card, but I recommend people check that out.
I have it.
Shocking.
Yeah, I know.
It's a really cool game. Love it. All right. Good night.
Cool. All right. Next game to talk about is Eldest Souls, developed by Fallen Flag Studio, published by United Label. Originally released July 2021, but the new Depths of the Forgotten expansion just released on all platforms. It is a free update for the game, which runs $19.99. In a final act of vengeance, the old gods have unleashed a great desolation upon the world. Mankind is fading, but with a glimmer of hope remaining. Heavy is the burden that lies on one lone warrior armed with a great sword of the purest obsidian. Pernell, what's going on in Eldest Souls?
I'm going to get this out the way right the hell now. I didn't get to the DLC because this game is hard as balls. but as it's designed to be, so that's okay. Eldest Souls is essentially a massive boss rush of a game. And that's okay. You know, I like boss rush games, right, typically. Your main character is tasked with running around essentially a citadel that houses all these old gods that were locked in there, tasked with the intent of destroying them all before they can do some old BS. So you move around, you explore the terrain, you can talk to NPCs as you come across them, and occasionally you'll find various items that may just be story fluff, but every once in a blue moon you may come across something like a blueprint, which seems to unlock weapons, though the ones I primarily came across involved fighting styles that I didn't frequently use, and also require that you beat 8 other bosses in the game, and I didn't do that. So, oof. But I believe they unlock something when you fulfill them. Anyway, the game itself, though, the thing, the meat and potatoes of the game is every once in a while, or much of the time, you'll walk into an arena and a boss fight will ensue. And this is when the game's combat actor factors in as well, because the boss will show up, their health bar will appear, and you have very few actions you can perform, but you are tasked with using those commands to absolute excellent effect. You can swing your sword in a normal combo fashion, like swipe, 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 light attacks. You can do a dash motion, which is useful for evasion. You can get up to 3 of them pretty much before it needs to cool up or replenish itself after being drained. You can do, actually, this is the most important thing that you can do. You can do a charge attack, but holding the button down, charge your attack, you let it go, you kind of dash forward and you strike. But at this point, you get what's so like a blood burst gauge filled up, and it starts to slowly deplete. As you're swinging your attack in this phase, your attack power goes up and your speed's up a little bit too. But the most important aspect of this state is that you get health back. Because this game doesn't have health potions or anything. The only way you can heal yourself is by beating the crap out of bosses after getting a charge attack off. And if you want to just go all in for one quick massive strike instead of doing the chip damage, you can do a blood burst attack, which may be what I just said, but forgive me, there's some weird terminology here. The blood burst attack is essentially like a one-shot massive attack for damage that completely depletes your blood gauge, and then you have to replenish it again. This is the dance you perform for the most part when you fight bosses in this game. However, once you eventually beat bosses, you'll get unlocked access to skill points and boss shards. Skill points can be used to unlock skills within one of 3 trees. You can only work with one skill tree at a time because they're meant to reference fighting styles for the game as well. you have basically like Wind Shard, you know, I guess it's, I can't remember, it's like Wind something, but essentially that one is meant to be influencing speed and dashing. So you'll be able to like move faster on the map. You'll be able to release Wind Shards after dashing, which do kind of bits of chip damage. And you can augment that with further skill points to have them do more damage and come out faster, homing, a number of cool features there. And there's a good level of customization because there's two pathways that you can follow on the skill tree for the battle styles. The second one that I used was the Berserk form, which is meant to be solely focused around like just dealing damage, like getting more damage off. And there's an interesting facet to this one because when you hit an enemy with a charge attack, with the version I use anyway, you'll generate like a Berserk shard, which when you pick it up, it for a short period of time gives you more damage and it stacks three times. So it kind of gets you in this weird mindset where rather than like doing a lot of evasion and keep away, you have to stay in on the boss and just keep wrecking them because you need to keep chaining these gems and keep them prevalent so that you can keep your attack power up. And then you can do like a super, like a Berserk dashing slice too when you charge up your Berserk tendrils on the left side of the screen. There's a fair bit going on there. And the last one that I completely ignored because I suck at this game is Counter. And Counter is pretty much built around the idea of like parrying and returning damage from enemies as they're beating the living snot out of you. Bosses in this game do not mess around, which is actually kind of understandable because if they did, it wouldn't be much of a game since the entire thing is boss fights. But you will be doing retries, lots and lots of retries, especially if you're an old ass man like me. I remember the third boss that I fought ended up taking me, like, I want to say 47, 48 deaths before I finally got it right. And for me, that's not even a big deal. I'm perfectly fine with retrying bosses over and over again, but I know there's a contingent of folks up there that are not so fond of it. But I forgot to mention also the boss shards. I skipped that. In addition to the skill points, the boss shards are what you get specifically from defeating individual bosses. And they're pretty awesome because you have 5 different slots. That could be off by one or two, whatever. There's 5 different slots on your skill tree that reflect like your charge attack, your dash attack, your base weapon damage, and your style attack. You can insert boss shards into those slots to give you a special buff related to those things. Each boss shard has its own purpose there. So the more bosses you kill, the more shards you get, and you'll find yourself mixing and matching to feel yourself going, I feel like this boss's shard is better for my dash attack because I heal every time I do damage from using this nail versus this one, which brings a ray of light down and does damage. I don't need damage. I need to freaking heal. So I'm using this guy. And they make it really easy to respect yourself. There's no like special item required or a place you got to go. You just say, I don't want to use this anymore. I want to use the other one. So you can just freely move around and just play with style to your heart's content, which I think is really awesome. Ultimately, the DLC, which again, I wouldn't know if I got to it or not because I'd never played the game before this. But to my understanding from the description, it adds some weapons, it adds some bosses. Good fucking luck seeing any of it. But that's kind of the point, too. I mean, you come into these games knowing that you are going to get hit with a challenge and you want to tell the game, I'm better than you, which is fine. And if that's the kind of person you are, you're going to love this game because the dance is fun. You're just going to get your legs broke multiple times before you finally get it right.
I will point out on the store page, it says that Depths of the Forgotten is a free major expansion, which introduces a new perilous region, 3 new bosses, a selection of special weapons, a weapon customization system, and an all new obliterating ability. And then to go off of the United Label Games page for the game, it says fast-paced and brutally challenging, Elden Souls is a unique boss rush Souls-like unique experience. You know, mm-hmm. We had to mention that. Game sitting at $20. What are your thoughts on it?
I think it's fun. I mean, again, if you're the type of person that's okay with dying until you get it right, I mean, I can't speak for the skill level of those guys who beat freaking Dark Souls with a dance pad, but in the amount of times I've died and retried, I've gotten $20 worth out of this game already, so I'm okay with it.
Nice.
I think it's a buy.
Cool. All right. Next game is Demon Turf, developed by Fabraz, published by Playtonic Friends, released back in November 4th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $24.99. The demon world is inhabited by all kinds of nasties, most of them lumped into gangs battling for dominion, each led by its own head honcho. Yet even these bad dudes are no match for the Demon King himself. Instead, the task falls to Beebs, a young demon barely 1,000 years old who decides it's time for her to kick every turf leader's butt and become the demon queen herself. Chris, what is going on in Demon Turf?
Well, first off, I want to clear up that it's Turf, T-U-R-F. So don't worry, folks. It, you know, this game's evil, but not that kind of evil. Anyways. Okay, so yes, Demon Turf. So this is a basically Mario 64 in hell. Let's call it that. That's a good synopsis. So yeah, you play as Beebs, who again, yeah, is a childlike demon of only 1,000 years old, who decides that, I guess for whatever reason, she's gonna take down the big honcho, you know, the big guy himself. And so to do that, she is going to need to, you know, basically take over like all these different levels in hell or wherever it is she is. It's a very hell-like place, I suppose. And, she does it with the help of her friend, Midgey, who is a Kappa in one of those barrels that you hold up with suspenders, like if a cartoon character loses his clothes. I guess that's what that is. And some other folks as well. Basically, like, there's a whole, it's structured a lot like Mario 64, in that there is a hub central, like, area, except that this is an actual town with people in it that you can talk to and do side quests for. And then you go out to whatever levels and try to collect batteries and sweets. Batteries, of course, will get you that's like stars, that's your ability to progress to the next stage. Sweets appear to be just kind of collectibles that you collect in order to purchase things that are a little less useful, like just different costumes or pets that you can have in the game. I haven't saved up enough to buy anything yet, so I've just been beating levels, like, rather than collecting the, because they're those, like, out off the beaten path, like, hard to find stuff to get you to explore, like, all these levels. So the main thing that you're going to notice about this game is the art style. It's 2D sprite-like characters in a kind of cel-shaded 3D environment. And by 2D, I mean that, like, when you change directions, it changes the whole sprite. Think like Final Fantasy Tactics, something like that. As the level rotates, like, your character faces a different way. I guess Paper Mario is another good example of that. Except it doesn't feel quite as flat, but yeah, it does feel like, you know, these drawn cartoon characters with less frames of animation than you're expecting, but like not in a bad way, but in a stylized way. Like running is like 3 frames, but the actual action is smooth. So yeah, it's that, and it's like basically, you know, platforming. Your character deals a lot with jumping. Actually, she's got a lot of moves. This game has a very healthy and huge menu of like different things, like collectibles. There's a photography move that you can do, so you can like take Polaroids of like different places in hell, and sometimes that ties into a quest, and sometimes you can just save it to your Switch and just have it. But like there's a moves page that just shows like it's 8 different sections, everything from like general moves, jumps, swim moves, spins, all that. And then each one of those has like 10 subsections where they just describe everything that she can do. And like she has 10 different jumps to start with. So it's a lot of like learning controls for like different fancy moves that she can do. But the cool thing is the game kind of lets you blaze your own path in terms of like getting to the goal, and it also lets you play the stages like it's fairly open. Like you can start, you know, as long as you have enough batteries, you can play whatever stage has that amount of batteries, and there's several that have zero. So and then of course when you save up enough batteries and you fight the boss, and you know, then do the thing over again.
I like the store page. It mentions that they have purchasable mods that could be combined in clever ways to completely change your play style, or you could buy some pets instead.
Yes. That's yeah, like I said, I haven't gotten to buy very many of those things, but it does look like you kind of have that choice of like purchasing, you know, improvements on your character or just pets. So that's one thing about it, is that there's a ton of different moves in this game, a lot more than you think there are, and mastering them is a very useful thing to do to get through these stages, because those stages are big, long, and tough. Death is typically instant as soon as you hit, like, get hit by an enemy or, you know, touch something deadly. Now, here's the thing, though. Here's the game's workaround for that, is that you get to start each stage, at least starting off, with four flags. And a flag is just a checkpoint. And you get to set the checkpoint wherever you want, within reason. You can't, like, set it in the middle of the air or something that's too small to set a checkpoint on, or, like, you know, ground that's going to break or something like that. But, like, anywhere that there's, like, a safe spot, you can typically put a checkpoint. And you can either try to hold on to those checkpoints for, like, later in the stage when things are going to get a little hairier, or just, you know, if you know that something's going to be tough, then go ahead and plant one of those bad boys down. But yeah, if you die, you have infinite lives, but you're always going to start off at the last checkpoint. So that's it's kind of cool. The game allows you to kind of be judicious like that. I quite like that. The nice. Yeah. And I also really like the soundtrack. It's unexpectedly hip. It's actually kind of hip hop and funk. And the character herself actually does some rapping too. So it's not what you would expect from like a hell based, like demon based game. But, you know, it's actually got a really fun little soundtrack to it. And I quite like that. My only real complaint is that like most games that are 3D, like, platforming and move kind of fast, the character's a bit floaty, so jumps can be kind of maddening, because you have to, like, because you're a 2D character on a 3D plane, you basically have to rely on your shadow, and you have to, like, make sure that your shadow's in the right place so that you can jump into the right place, or else fall completely. Like, you know, you could be, again, some of these stages, like, there's a tower stage that's just huge, and, like, you could spend an hour getting to, like, to the top of it if you, you know, and if you fall off, then you gotta start all over again. So, unless you set, you know, a checkpoint. In which case, you know, you could just hold the up button, and that will actually give you it's kind of a suicide button, because your character is immortal, so she doesn't care. She just turns into a spirit and goes back to the checkpoint. So, you know, it is a little more frustrating than it has to be in terms of, like, the jumping and everything. But, I mean, you know, I'm able to manage, so it's not like it's bad. It's just, like, I wish this was a little tighter. Apart from that, though, this is a really cool game with, like, some real personality to it.
Nice. Well, it clocks in at $24.99. What are your thoughts?
I was actually going to check to see if it has a physical version, because I would say...
Yes, it does.
Okay, is it the same price?
I believe so, because I have it on Xbox for $24.99. I got it at GameStop. Ah. Yeah, go figure. A game actually has a physical release on Xbox that's smaller like this. Doesn't happen nice. Often.
Yeah, no, yeah, at that point, yeah, I would definitely recommend this one. Yeah, like I said, it's good for, like, for platformer, 3D platformer, collectathon enthusiasts. I mean, it's not quite a collectathon, like, you know, Castle on the Coast, which was one I recently reviewed, but it's got a lot of things to collect. It's got a lot of things to do and a lot of levels to do it in. So it's quite good for, like, that crowd. Like I said, if you're a big fan of, like, the Mario 64 inspired games, then yeah, this is a good entry into that. And I'd say it's worth that, but no more than that.
Sounds good. All right, we got one final game to talk about tonight, and that is Gloomhaven with the Jaws of the Lion DLC, developed by Flaming Fowl Studios, published by Asmodee Digital, released May 17th for Gloomhaven on the PC for $17.99. Your path will lead you to the undercity of Gloomhaven whilst fighting zealots, chaos demons, or even blood monstrosity. Will you be able to stand against the horrors that grow beneath your feet? Purnell, what is going on in the Jaws of the Lion DLC for Gloomhaven?
There's a few things that I need to probably point out in regards to this DLC. So as anyone listening, well, you might not know, actually, basically Gloomhaven, for those who don't know, is a video game version of a very popular board game that exists, and it's massive. It's a very massive game. And initially, that game was really hard for people to, not necessarily hard to pick up, but it was a lot to learn and pick up as you settle into the actual game space. A little bit after the original Gloomhaven came out, Jaws of the Lion was released. It was a physical release that primarily was sold at Targets, I think, actually. And the idea behind it was that it was a standalone game that was kind of meant to be like an introductory into the world of Gloomhaven, meaning that it had a lot of like sort of like tutorial elements to the game where you're like, hey, here's how, you know, these spell cards work and whatnot. I think I mentioned it in a previous episode how they work, but I might get into it a little bit here too. It gave you an understanding of like, this is how the game works. And they also gave you four new cool characters to use that could then be used in the original game after you complete the entire adventure that is contained in Jaws of the Lion, which was a standalone experience. However, we have a video game version now. And unlike these old board, the other board game versions, they already had a really cool tutorial in the digital video game and a nice set of difficulty options and the like. So the tutorial that was a large part of what made that game interesting and the fact that it was a standalone experience, they're not a thing about this anymore. What you're primarily buying in Jaws of the Lion digital DLC is specifically more scenarios and more new and new enemies you can fight and new cool items and such, which you have to pretty much get to by playing through the campaign, getting to a specific point and accessing it as one of the many options on the board that leads you to this beginning of the Jaws of the Lion quest line. However, if you're the type of person who's like, well, who knows when or if I'll even get to that point, maybe I'm not concerned about that. The real reason for me to get this thing, regardless of how far I am near the game or whatnot, is the fact that those four characters that I mentioned before are also in this DLC, and they're playable from the start, and they're very different from the characters that the game usually starts you with, which is pretty cool because there are some particularly interesting, you know, playing styles these characters have. The one that I ended up liking the most of the ones I messed around with was the Void Warden. That character's style is that they kind of do a sort of give and take, as in they can give you buffs at the cost of detriment. So, for example, you might be able to let another character move spaces and attack again after their turn ran up, but by doing so, they'll take damage after they've done the motions. Or you can hypnotize enemies and make them walk to another enemy and do damage to them. But of course, as a result, you'll get cursed for using it. And then, of course, the other character that I ended up liking a lot was the Demolitionist, which their whole shtick is about burning through cards and exploding things. So you might come across like an object on the screen. You can blow the object up, and then anyone around the object will take damage. You might be fighting an enemy who's like kind of like a narrow corridor. If you're fighting them near a wall, you can punch them, do damage, and then if they're next to the wall, they'll do extra damage because, like, saying you punched them through the wall. It's just some really cool aspects of the characters and the like. Like, I like the other two characters I wasn't as fond of, but they're still cool. There's the Red Guard, who's kind of meant to be like a wall tanky character. So, like, you might be able to put up a cool flame veil around yourself. So, if an enemy walks up next to you, they'll take damage just by being in your vicinity. Almost like saying, you can't get past me, punk, do some damage or go home. And then Hatchet. He is a he's a ranged character, but his shtick is that he can do a lot of damage by throwing hatchets that he holds, but he has to also retrieve the hatchets when he uses them. But he can also call one of them his favorite hatchet, and that hatchet does more damage than the other one, which is an interestingly odd concept to work with here. But they all pretty much function differently from the other characters in that sense, and I feel as though just getting them makes it worthwhile as far as the overall game is concerned. But I do want to mention real quick just like how the battles work for people who aren't familiar with Gloomhaven, because I think that's a pretty cool thing. And I, in my opinion, the sort of thing that makes this unique.
I was looking at the Steam page, and Gloomhaven base game has 17 unique characters.
Mm-hmm. And it's pretty cool too.
And then this adds four more. So,
Because like the interesting thing I see, since you mentioned the number of characters, one thing that's cool about this game and how it works. So I'm talking about two more things. Is how characters are actually unlocked in the game. So as you're playing through the game, you take on missions on the map. So as far as I'm like, you know, save this village, it's on, or save this caravan, it's on fire. You go out there and there's monsters that you fight. So you take your mercenary guild that you've selected from the beginning of the game. You go out there and do battle. Each character, when you recruit them initially, has a specific goal that you can choose one of two for. So, like, for example, it might be I'm the type of character who just wants to be here to help people out. So your goal as a character is to see two other characters fulfill their goal. Or you could say, hey, I'm really fond of this particular area, and their quest might be do four quests in this specific region of the board. But if you fulfill either one, whichever one you select, they leave. Like, that character just goes away. And then you unlock another character. It's almost like saying their mission, they all have their own mission. You know, typical JRPGs is just like, hey, we're all working together before we beat the big bad, and then what happens? This game is like, no, I got my fill, I'm out. And he had to recruit someone else. But depending on who you choose and what their mission is determines what your next class will be. So it's a pretty cool pull of give and take. But the sad part is it makes it so you don't really want to get particularly attached to your characters either. Though you can use them in other modes later. So it's not they're gone for good. They're just gone from your campaign. So that's the part about the characters. So you'll be unlocking and eventually getting through those 17 characters. Now the battle itself. So this is going to be a little bit weird to explain, but it's part of the fun. So every character has a deck of cards of various quantities. Some might have like 12 cards, some might have like 10 cards, depending on how their play style works. And each card has a top and a bottom on it. And each of those has a different action related to it. One might have, say, for example, at the top, it'll say, you know, do 3 damage and move 2 spaces. The bottom might say heal for 2 health. That's a very simplified version of a card, but they can get pretty complicated. But then they also give you the ability to either do a 2 damage or 2 move. Now, the last part of this is that there's a number in the center that ranges from like 1 to 100, and that's considered your initiative. So the lower the number, the more likely you are to go first. Now, every character in the game of a round has to choose 2 cards, and then those 2 cards, you'll use the top action of one card and the bottom action of another, and the order of every person on that round is based on the order of the lowest number in your deck. That you chose, of the 2 that you chose. So 5 is over faster than 10, 10 is faster than 25, et cetera, et cetera. Now, the last 2 things about that in combat, you're probably, what the fuck are you talking about, Pernell? But that's what happens when you describe a freaking
You've said the last 2 things like 6 times during this review so far.
But, yeah, because the last thing is actually 5 things. I'm describing how the cards work.
Oh, Jesus.
So you use your cards in combat, you do the top action and the bottom action, and then they go to like a sort of discard pile, and they don't come back for a little while. Eventually, you get to the point where you're completely out of cards, and you need to get your cards back. There are 2 things you can do at this point. There's a short rest and a long rest. Short rest, you get right back into your next round, but as a result, the game will randomly just discard or burn off one of your cards in your hand, which means now if you started with 10 cards, now you got 9. Or you can do a long rest, which allows you to go through, you have to wait a whole round, but then you can choose the cards that are going to get just like burned away.
So a long rest is also something I could do during one of your reviews.
Kiss my ass, man. You give me these deep games and say review it.
Adam.
The thing, didn't you review the game as a base already, like a while ago? This was just the DLC, and you're going right back into the full game review. You're like, listen, everyone, I'm taking all this time. I'm going to tell you about the entire game.
You know what? You can hold me, Chris, hold me to this. Next week, every game I get, I'm going like, this game is about apples. You fucking throw it at a donkey. It dies. You should buy it. I just did. Buy it.
You can't steal my bit.
They're going to be the shortest fucking reviews you've ever seen. But for now, with this game, I'm going to get it out of my system because next week you're going to get some short fucking reviews. And you can hold me to that. They're going to be full games with short reviews. So you take one of the 2 rests and you come back in. If you run out of cards by doing too many rests in a situation, you actually lose the battle because your characters don't have any more actions to perform and they straight up lose. So strategic, efficient, and quick battles is the name of the game here. So at the end of the day, as far as the DLC is concerned, I think it is genuinely worth the money, even if you don't care about the bonus content as far as like the additional levels and campaign areas go, because the characters are just freaking fantastic anyway. There's a lot of value to this.
Well, let's take this in 2 steps, because this isn't the cheapest game around. The game itself is $35. What are your thoughts on that?
The physical board game retailed for $150. It's worth your money.
Fair. And the DLC is $18. What do you think?
The physical retails for $50. It's worth your money.
Works for me. I can't argue with that.
Sounds good to me.
Don't have time.
Next week,
Yeah, we don't have time. We're all out. We used it all.
We're all out of it. Don't worry, you'll get it all back. Tim's fault. I'm writing it on paper right now.
Oh, man. All right. Well, we are finished with this episode. Thanks to you two for being here and doing your thing. Thanks to Brooke and Tim for doing their thing as well. Music this episode. Chris, you're a musician. Why don't we play something from you?
What?
Yeah. Do you have anything new that you've done recently?
Oh, you want me to give you music? No, I don't have anything.
Well, then we'll just use something old that you did.
Yeah.
Yay. Anyone have any final words to end the show?
We don't have time for that. End the show.